Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Late night television has been making headlines. From the cancellation of CBS's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert to the temporary suspension of ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, followed by his return last week. There are questions about mergers and big TV business deals. There are questions about the role of the chairman in the FCC. And perhaps the biggest question of all is, will late night comedy, as we know it, survive? Joining us to talk about these developments in the changing television landscape is Michael Schneider, executive editor of TV at Variety. Welcome back to All Sides, Michael.
Thank you for having me again.
I wanted to start by playing some audio from Jimmy Kimmel's monologue from when he returned. He addressed his comments about Charlie Kirk and spoke about the importance of free speech and thanked his supporters and his detractors.
Maybe most of all, I want to thank the people who don't support my show and what I believe, but support my right to share those beliefs anyway. People who I never would have imagined, like Ben Shapiro, Clay Travis, Candace Owens, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, even my old pal Ted Cruz.
And he poked fun at the president, too.
The president of the United States made it very clear he wants to see me and the hundreds of people who work here fired from our jobs. Our leader celebrates Americans losing their livelihoods because he can't take a joke.
So, Michael, I wanted to just start with you. As someone who writes about TV for a living, what did you think of Jimmy Kimmel's comeback monologue? It was long, 28 minutes. It covered a lot of things. What were your thoughts on it?
It did. I mean, I think my initial thought was, he rose to the occasion. There was a lot of eyeballs were going to be on him. There was a lot of question of how he was going to respond. And I think he executed it brilliantly. So I think the reaction from most critics agreed with that.
The night that the monologue aired, Kimmel was back on TV in some markets, but some markets, including Columbus, did not air him. Sinclair and Nexstar took a few extra days to bring him back. What do you think the tipping point was for them, a Sinclair, a Nexstar? Why did they eventually put him back on the air, too?
I think there's a combination of things. I think they realized that they couldn't hold out forever, that there was a groundswell of support in having the show come back from a lot of fans, a lot of viewers. Also, it's part of the ongoing relationship between networks and affiliates, where at some point, if they were going to continue their boycott, it was going to affect long term the relationship with the network, which is already strained, which we can get into in a bit. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, if it continued, there's a chance that maybe Disney would move the show elsewhere and eventually start looking at their relationship as affiliate and network partners when those deals come up. So it was going to be untenable to continue that boycott for too long.
Yeah, and with Disney, unlike traditional cable, people now can cancel streaming services with a single click instead of having to call a cable company. So that allowed consumers to react more immediately if they wanted to, related to Jimmy Kimmel. Do you think Disney saw massive cancellations as a result of Kimmel being taken off the air? Like, can we know what Disney saw?
There's been rumored numbers out there, which no one's been able to really confirm. A number as high as 1.7 million cancellations has been reported out there by independent sources. But again, Disney is not commenting on that. Mm-hmm. But there definitely was a groundswell of a movement to condemn Disney. And I think Disney did see some impact.
Is this what happened with Jimmy Kimmel? A precedent for any modern presidents? Have any recent presidencies ever threatened to take a TV host off the air before?
No, I don't think we've ever seen a lot of things with this administration, but in particular, in making such comments about about a television show. I think we've seen past presidents actually commend their critics, or at least say, listen, I don't like what you say, but I do support allowing you the ability to say it. And this president has said none of that.
Right. So all of the other late night hosts kind of banded together in support of Jimmy Kimmel, and they're supposed to be competitors. I mean, if Jimmy Kimmel was gone, their ratings maybe would go up. But what did you think of all of that? Are they in this, we're all in this together mentality?
Yeah, you know, this crop of late night show hosts, they've been really supportive of each other for several years now. You know, they all did during the Hollywood strikes a couple years ago, they all banded together and did a podcast for a couple of months called the Strike Force 5, where they all got together and communicated. Unlike the late night wars of the 90s, where Jay Leno and David Letterman probably wouldn't have been so supportive of each other, this group has been really, really great with each other, down to appearing on each other's shows. And I think you saw that continue with Stephen Colbert's cancellation, and now with what happened with Jimmy Kimmel.
Do the networks want them to do that? I mean, wouldn't NBC, I guess, with Jimmy Fallon, be like, no, just take all the ratings. You're the other Jimmy.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. It's a different world now in terms of competition, only because, you know, there's only a small percentage of people who probably still watch these shows live on linear TV. These days, people are catching up on these shows through streaming and through social media, and so it's less of a winner takes all. There's now more of an ability for all of these shows to coexist because of the way people now consume these shows.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the future of late-night comedy with Michael Schneider, executive editor of TV at Variety. So what is your take on big conservative personalities and politicians coming out to support Jimmy Kimmel? Even if the support was not directed at him, it was a support of the First Amendment. He made some unlikely allies. We heard that in a clip earlier. Were you surprised of these unlikely allies?
I was a little surprised. I think, though, the larger issue was the overstep of the FCC chairman, Brendan Carr, where he got so aggressive on a right-wing podcast in criticizing Disney, and basically, as Ted Cruz, of all people, said, sounded like a mafioso in basically threatening Disney and saying, we can do this the easy way or the hard way, threatening the licenses of Disney's television stations because they just don't like the speech of Jimmy Kimmel. And I think that concerns everyone on both sides of the aisle, the chilling effect that if this FCC becomes super weaponized and starts to really pinpoint different media outlets just because of their criticism of the president, well, that's a slippery slope. And I think neither side wants to go down that road.
Yeah, what is your take on the FCC here? Because they've been known as an independent body that mostly just fines you if you say a bad word on or something like that. Like they crop up whenever something weird, random happens at the Super Bowl or someone says a bad word and they forget to beep it out. But now they're really involved in business transactions. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's part of a weaponization of a number of agencies by this administration, but in particular with the FCC, Brendan Carr, the chairman, he's one of the architects of Project 2025. This has been one of his ideas from the beginning, is to use the power of this agency to silence rivals, to implement all sorts of new segments of the plan that they want to continue. So it's unprecedented seeing what Brendan Carr is doing right now. It's a much smaller FCC right now. There are only three commissioners. Normally there are more, and it's more balanced. Right now there's two Republicans, just one Democrat. So they're using the power of this position to really do some unprecedented things.
Earlier we were talking about Sinclair and Nexstar and how they had to, they gave in a few days later and brought Jimmy Kimmel back. But you mentioned that there's a strain out there with the way. Talk to me about the way TV business is run. And because I think that there's a lot of people here in Columbus who didn't even know who owned our ABC station until it became an issue of whether they could watch Jimmy Kimmel or not.
Right. This is part of an ongoing issue between affiliates and networks that have changed dramatically over the years. Once upon a time, up until the 90s, the networks actually paid stations to carry their programming. But by the end of the 90s, that had reversed. And now stations pay the network for the rights to carry their news programming, sports programming, entertainment programming. So that strained the relationship because at the same time, ratings have gone down. across the board. The networks are also pushing a lot more viewership onto their streaming services like Disney Plus or Paramount Plus. So that's also caused some strain between stations and their networks. And also just the money that the stations get from cable operators and satellite operators has also diminished as people subscribe less to cable, subscribe less to satellite services. So they have less money coming in because they're paid from cable and satellite operators, but they take a lot of that money, turn around and give it to the networks. Well, if the networks continue to demand more money, then the stations have less money for their own operations. And so all of that sort of led to an ongoing strain in that relationship. And that's partly what you saw a couple weeks ago when Sinclair and Nexstar decided to just take Jimmy Kimmel off the air. That was also a little bit of a, stick it to Disney situation, as much as it was they're not fans of Kimmel's politics.
And when we talked about the Stephen Colbert issue, CBS said it was because of ratings and money, and Stephen Colbert's show is expensive and it wasn't getting enough ratings and blah, blah, blah. But then the Paramount deal came out. And even if CBS insists that the Paramount deal is not the reason, that's the other reason. So those sort of deals are important to the future of these companies surviving.
Right, right. Yeah, the optics, as you say, of, regardless of whether or not Paramount says that's why they canceled Stephen Colbert, the fact is they needed to get a deal done, a very huge deal, Skydance acquiring Paramount. That was critical to the survival of the company. And the fact is the FCC, now that it has been politicized, is sort of demanding more quid pro quos in order for deals to be approved. And this was a big one where they needed to show some sort of deference and some sort of bending at the knee a little bit to this administration. And timing is everything. And the fact that they canceled Stephen Colbert right as they needed that deal to be approved, well, it doesn't take much to see, well, something was going on there. And that's the same thing right now with Sinclair and Nexstar. These are pretty conservative companies to begin with. I don't think they're thrilled to be carrying shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live. So this made it an easy decision for them to boycott the show. But also, they're looking to curry favor with the FCC. They have big deals that are going in front of the Federal Communications Commission. Nexstar wants to purchase another station group named Tegna in a $6.2 billion deal that will put them at 80% of households across the country, which right now is illegal. The most you can be across the country is 39%. So they need that rule changed. Well, the FCC changes that rule. So of course they need to curry favor with the FCC. Sinclair has its own business in front of the FCC that also needs approval. Same thing. So these days the FCC demands some sort of quid pro quo. Well, this was a perfect example of something they could do, which is, well, the chairman doesn't like Kimmel. We're going to take him off the air.
Did you say that they want to go from owning 39% to 80%? Is that what?
Yeah.
That's a big change in numbers. I mean, that sounds like a monopoly.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's why there are rules in place right now to prevent that. Mm-hmm. But they would like to end those rules. And that's also, when we see what just happened with Sinclair and Nexstar in taking Kimmel off the air. If you have a company that now covers 80% of the country, well, that's a lot of power.
So what are the ripple effects here short term? Kimmel's back on the air. Stephen Colbert's not being taken off the air until May. So is late night comedy for the next few months going to go back to business as usual? Or do you think something's going to change dramatically of what we see on TV for the next few months?
Well, unless this administration, which you just never know what it wants to do, it specifically targeted Kimmel in this case. It could very well target him again or target Seth Meyers again. So you just don't know what they're planning on doing. Beyond that, though, it is a little bit business as usual. But like you said, Colbert goes off the air in May. And there's still a bigger question of what's the future of late night if the networks don't find it worth profitable keeping these shows on the air. Then you could see more shows eventually go away. When Kimmel does decide to eventually retire, ABC's not going to replace it with another talk show. They'll put something else there. So these shows, one by one, are starting to fall by the wayside.
And will there be other ripple effects in television and film? Like, do films have to worry about a tax cut being revoked or a streaming service get nervous about airing something like South Park if the administration doesn't like the film that's being made?
Yeah, that's that. That's the scary thing about what's going on right now is everything's on the table, and this administration has shown it's willing to use its power to try to silence its critics. So the question is, well, what does come next? And will they go after some of these other companies when they do have business in front of the FCC or the DOJ because they don't like something on the air? And will it be a case of, you want that deal approved? Well, take South Park off the air, or take Seth Meyers off the air. So we just don't know what is in store.
All right. Well, when the next thing happens, we'll invite you back to talk about it. We've been talking about the current state and the future state of late night television with Michael Schneider, executive editor of TV at Variety. Thank you for your time today, Michael.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the history of late night comedy TV from Steve Allen to Johnny Carson. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Poking fun at the president and political goings-on in Washington has been a staple of late-night monologues. Today's late-night TV hosts, from Jon Stewart to Stephen Colbert to Jimmy Kimmel, feast nightly on political foibles and relish in delivering presidential potshots. Colbert's show is going off the air next year, and Jimmy Kimmel is back after a temporary suspension following remarks he made related to the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Kimmel's suspension united the left and some on the right about concerns related to free speech. But how did we get here, and where do we go from here? To help us answer this question is Robert Thompson, a professor of media studies at Syracuse University. Welcome back to All Sides, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
So I thought it would be instructive to talk a little bit about the evolution of late night. But before we get there, I wanted your just initial take on Jimmy Kimmel's monologue from last week on Jimmy Kimmel Live. He was back on the air after almost a week off the air, and he came back and he delivered 28 minutes of his return to the airwaves opener. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, before I heard it, I thought this is the last job in the world I would want staring down my face. I mean, he had an incredible job to do. And of course, the scrutiny he knew would be from his fans who were going to be looking for him backing off, pulling a CBS, ABC, calming his approach and everything. And they were going to be mad at him. But he was also going to be scrutinized by all the people who didn't like Kimmel to make sure that he did enough. So impossible to, in fact, have everybody cheering at the end of it. But I thought it was masterful and probably did as well as he possibly could have. He made his fan base happy by continuing to do the old-fashioned Jimmy Kimmel with all the jokes directed against the president. And I don't think he made anybody on the other side happy. And if you watch the comments that were going on in places like Fox News, they'd have the big the lower thirds. Kimmel doesn't really apologize, that kind of thing. But they made them happy enough that both Sinclair and Nexstar put the show back on by its Friday night rerun, which in fact was a rerun of his return on Tuesday, strangely enough. When he went into that whole bit and he broke up a lot, which Kimmel has a tendency to do. He's a big
emotional guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it makes, I got to say, it makes me uncomfortable. It's, there's certain kinds of people you expect to see cry. I don't like crying for my late night comedians. Remember, Letterman only did it on 9/11 and when he had his return from his heart surgery. But anyway, mm-hmm. Kimmel comes out and he does his whole thing. And then he does that bit about, I saw that Charlie Kirk's widow has forgiven the person who shot her husband. And if you believe in the teachings of Jesus, as I do, that's the way we should be behaving. That was, and it sounds cynical to say this, and I think he probably believes that, but that was a masterful touch because he really went completely beyond the usual way of Team Jimmy, Team the Other Side, and all of that. And it was kind of hard to argue with that. So it was long, you're right, 28 minutes, but I think it was about as best as he could have performed an absolutely impossible job under the circumstances.
And now he's taken a show to Brooklyn, where he was born, and he's returned there several times. But he joked that he was doing that so that FCC Chairman Brendan Carr couldn't find him. So he's hiding from the FCC chair. What's your take of the FCC chairman's role in this whole late night situation over the past 2 weeks?
Well, if we parse it out chronologically, it seems like his comments were the catalyst that got this all going. So Kimmel, of course, delivered the comments in question in his monologue on Monday. Things were brewing, but on Tuesday, he goes back. He's on the air again on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we get the comments from the chair, and then we get the almost immediate responses from first Nexstar and then Sinclair. And by Wednesday night, of course, Kimmel has been pulled really, really fast in which that happened. It's not the first time that an FCC chair is thrown around their weight trying to get content changed. The most famous time it ever happened, and one of the great moments in the history of American broadcasting, was Newton Minow back in 1961, I think it was, the Vast Wasteland speech. He was on the complete other side of the political spectrum, but he was talking to the National Association of Broadcasters, a room full of station owners and general managers, and he said, if you were to watch your own stations from sign in to sign off, you would find a vast wasteland. Greedy people on game shows, too much violence. And he said, you know, you have a public service when you get a license for airwaves, and we're going to be watching what you're doing. Very similar to what we heard this time around, though for completely different sets of the objections to content were very, very different to make it not that similar at all. But we've seen this before. Government stepping in and complaining about programming. You don't have to go back to Newton Minow's Vast Wasteland speech. Murphy Brown, Dan Quayle, when he was the sitting vice president of the United States, took on that show as the enemy of family values and specifically mentioned a specific episode of Murphy Brown as well. CBS dealt with that very differently than CBS would deal this time around with 60 Minutes and all of those places.
In preparing for this, we went back and reviewed some earlier late night hosts, starting with Steve Allen. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the history. First, I have a couple audio clips that reflect some political commentary of the day. So here's Steve Allen in 1959 introducing a sketch into a real life congressional hearing into corruption and the mafia.
The big news from Washington this week is about the Senate hearings on the question of gangster influence in the jukebox industry, as we mentioned earlier. Here is our own racket investigation. Here, it's a man some of you may know, this is Eggs Benedict. Eggs Benedict, notorious underworld labor leader and crook who was deported from the United States in 1948, but who was returned once every year to pick up his New York State unemployment check.
I guess, what's your take on hearing this type of soundbite from the show? I mean, did Steve Allen get into politics very much?
Look,
Well, you just heard him get into politics, mm-hmm. and that was pretty not very deep into it. And the fact is, we didn't have to worry about these kinds of things that have just been going on with Colbert and Kimmel really until the turn of the century, because that's not what late night was doing. We even talk about Saturday Night Live and its cutting edge, whatever. I remember when Saturday Night Live's equivalent of political satire was Chevy Chase making fun of Gerald Ford by falling down a lot. He would trip over his podium and all that kind of thing. Late night television until the turn of the century, Johnny Carson for 30 years told jokes about politics, but he was not a political satirist. Before him, Jack Parr had JFK on when he was running for office. So it had political content, but it wasn't political satire. And you just heard a bit of Steve Allen. Steve Allen did a lot of really brilliant stuff in his early years, but political satire was not it. What really changed was when Jon Stewart, over on a Comedy Central cable channel, he takes over from Craig Kilborn for The Daily Show. And for the first couple of months, he does the same kind of what we used to call frat boy humor. And this was when Clinton was being impeached. And it was the business as usual. And then the 2000 election came. This was the one that was decided in the Supreme Court with the hanging chads. And then the lead up to the war, when everybody was afraid to say anything post 9/11 that was unpatriotic for fear of being painted with the same brush that got Bill Maher and the Dixie Chicks and all the rest. And all of a sudden, The Daily Show starts doing in comic mode what the journalists on TV should have been doing in a journalistic mode. It was investigative comedy. And that had not been done before. And Stewart got a lot of attention for that. And many, many, many of the late night people who were already on the air had to adapt to that. It's where the action was. And the people who were going to come on after that came out swinging. So all this stuff we hear from Myers and Colbert and Kimmel, who didn't do that when he first was on the air, he would begin to do it later. All of that is in the tradition that really starts, believe it or not, with Jon Stewart. The only people who were still working in the Carson tradition were Jay Leno and, of course, Jimmy Fallon, who has taken over. So this whole issue that we've been dealing with really didn't start happening in late night until late night started doing serious civic conversations. And that really doesn't happen until 2000 and beyond.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about late night and the future of late night with Robert Thompson, professor of media studies at Syracuse University. So, you know, we talked about Steve Allen, next came Jack Parr, and then longtime Tonight Show host Johnny Carson. In a 1970 Life magazine interview, Carson said he wouldn't share his political views on the show and thought trying to sway public opinion was, quote, a real danger. But by the 90s, he was mining political missteps for some laughs. Let's listen.
Well, we're going to talk about it. I guess we could talk about the travails of Bill Clinton. Boy, that's politics, right? The poor Clintons. They've been all over the tube. They were on 60 Minutes. You know that? Mrs. Clinton did Primetime Live with Sam Donaldson. I think things tonight are going a little far. I understand Governor Clinton and Jennifer Flowers are going to be on studs.
I mean, he said he wanted to stay out of politics. He would get into it a little bit. I feel like late night used to be a safe space for silly things. You know, Jay Leno had his headlines. David Letterman had his stupid pet tricks. But you're saying that Jon Stewart is who started changing the format.
Yeah, I think he was, and it's not like other people weren't doing some stuff, but yeah, he was the one that I think everybody was paying attention to, and he inspired others to move in that direction. When Letterman first got out, Letterman was doing the anti-Tonight Show, but not politically. He was doing it with Dada, you know, the putting Alka-Seltzer all over his body and jumping in the water, doing the episodes where the camera turns upside down throughout the course of the thing. He was just a crazy stuff. What Conan would later pick up on, Late Night from Outer Space. It was Stewart that really got them going in the other direction. And even that bit we just heard from Carson, for those who still remember who Jennifer Flowers was or what Studs was, it's funny how these late night jokes make no sense if you weren't alive during that time. That was still a pretty tame bit of comedy. Johnny told jokes about politics throughout his career, including up through the Clinton period, but they weren't political satire. They weren't these worked out essays, similar to like Rachel Maddow does her big long lectures. These are done in a comic mode, and that didn't happen until much later. And here's the interesting thing. We're going to go back, I am pretty sure, to the Tonight Show era. So all the people that are doing controversial comedy realize that the networks, broadcast networks, legacy networks, have no desire to fight the battles that will need to be fought, to stand behind them or anything. They're going to all go play elsewhere. And unlike in the days of Johnny Carson, there's a lot of elsewhere to play. Substack and all these YouTube channels and what Conan's been off of legacy television for a long time and doing just fine. So I think all those folks are going to ultimately leave, regardless of how long Kimmel ends up lasting or Seth Meyers. This is not the place for them. You know what I think is going to be happen in the end? Fallon sitting over there on the Tonight Show. The Tonight Show started this all 71 years ago in 1954, doing this kind of innocuous, late funny jokes. And Fallon is the least susceptible to attack because his humor is pretty tame compared to the other ones. And I can see a situation in the not too distant future where the era where the Tonight Show was the one late night comedy show is we come back to that 70 some odd years later. Mm-hmm. And the Tonight Show ends up being the last one standing.
Hmm. Who decided it was a good idea back in the day to do live late night comedy at 11:30 at night?
You know, there was a show, a woman called Faye Emerson, who does the first late night talk show in television history. So technically, the first late night person was a woman.
Well, I'll be.
Now it wasn't. Yeah, it would be a long time to what Joan Rivers till we get the next one. The idea was that you had all this audience built up in prime time and they were staying for the news. And you knew that a lot of them were going to go to bed. But why gather all those people and not keep the stragglers? And that was, I think, the idea behind the original Tonight Show, that we could continue. TV was growing. 1954, when the Tonight Show starts, 1953 was the first year that more than half the country, the United States, had a television set. So we had just passed the 50% mark the previous year. So TV was starting to get a huge potential audience. And like anything else, the city gets settled in the beginning, prime time, and then you move out to the suburbs. Daytime had been settled a long time ago. Late night was another place to squeeze a few more advertising dollars out of people who, after prime time in their local news, didn't turn off their television set. And of course, The Tonight Show became a major institution.
All right. So your prediction is that Jimmy Fallon with The Tonight Show will be the last man standing. And so then where will we see the Stephen Colberts and the Jimmy Kimmels? Will they pop up on YouTube only, podcasts, the way Conan is?
I think, right. They'll do what? And I think we don't even know the possible venues that they'll have as opportunities like next Friday. I mean, the venues and the opportunities and the technologies are increasing to infinity and beyond, it seems like. So there will be places for them to go. Now, we have to remember, Kimmel and Colbert are already the grand old men. Kimmel is by far has got the longest tenure in late night now at 22, 23 years. I forget. Carson made it almost to 30, but he's the one with the longest tenure. Colbert is 60, I think. So it's going to be all those people that learned from, just like Kimmel learned from Letterman, all those people who grew up watching Colbert and Seth Meyers and Kimmel, they are not dreaming. For three generations, the dream was that you would get to be on The Tonight Show as a comedian. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate dream was that Johnny would let you sit on his couch and talk to you. And the ultimate dream was that you someday would be the next Johnny. I don't know any comedian today that's dream is to be on The Tonight Show or to host The Tonight Show. I know a lot of aspiring comedians today that I don't think know what The Tonight Show is.
Yeah, their dream is to go on a 50-city comedy tour, so, right?
Right, and get there by way of the stuff they put on whatever it is, TikTok, YouTube channel. I mean, all of these other ways in which people are consuming. And let's face it, The Tonight Show used to be, like The Ed Sullivan Show was before it, the way we created stars. Stars are created in very different ways now.
Yeah, the biggest stars are from TikTok now.
That's right. The biggest stars are from vertical screens.
Vertical videos, exactly. Vertical videos are where we find the new funny. Well, we've been talking with Robert Thompson, professor of media studies at Syracuse University. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And coming up, we are going to meet the co-author of a book called That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about late-night TV, how Jimmy Kimmel is back on the air, how CBS will end Stephen Colbert's show next year, and how streaming and short video reels is where late-night comedy bits get more clicks and more views. Late-night hosts like Kimmel, Colbert, and Jon Stewart get called out for their liberal bent. But Fox News personality Greg Gutfeld is the late-night host earning some of the biggest ratings. Here to give his take is Matt Sinkowitz, a professor of communications and international studies at Boston College. He's the co-author of the book That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. He also edited the book Saturday Night Live and American TV. Welcome back to All Sides, Professor Sinkowitz.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So I wanted to start with Jimmy Kimmel's situation. Do you think that him getting pulled off the air was surprising, or was it expected, or was this going to happen eventually?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, it obviously takes a number of circumstances to get to the point where something like that takes place. The specifics around it were not something one could predict, but there are elements of the dynamics, both in politics and in the media industry, that made that vulnerability possible, made that something that could take place. So we have, on the one hand, a very, let's say, activist FCC who wants to be involved in what's on the air. You can make your own judgments as to the wisdom of that, but it's clear that that is something that's taking place, that Brendan Carr wants to have greater involvement, and that Trump is pushing towards greater FCC involvement in television. And at the same time, you have sort of a business crisis. The old business model for late night TV does not provide it the kind of protection that it would have 20 years ago. The numbers are they're not just a little bit smaller. They're much, much smaller. So you get to the point where you've got somebody making a lot of money, very expensive show with a lot of people who are, you know, making their living on it. It's not bringing in the kind of revenue that it used to. So it becomes a target. Then an opportunity comes up, which happened with the Charlie Kirk situation, and the FCC jumps in, puts pressure on. It's a little bit subtle. It's not clear who's, you know, doing what, where the affiliates are involved, where the governmental pressure is. But that whole sort of situation comes together to make this, you know, certainly not expected, but understandable when you look back on it.
And Jimmy Kimmel returned to late night less than a week later after he was removed. He returned with a long 28-minute monologue. What did you think of it as someone who studies TV?
You know, I mean, I think that Kimmel there is putting forth a perspective that comedians respect, right? The idea that, you know, comedy is not just there for jokes. It's something that keeps our society vibrant, that there needs to be the opportunity to push boundaries in those spaces. I mean, I think that he sort of hit the marks that we're looking for in that. There's enough of sort of an explanation kind of where the original controversy came from. But this is going to be the position for comedians largely across the political spectrum. And I think that's part of what, comes sort of interesting. People with various political views could agree that they don't want the government coming in and pressuring comedy off the air. Mm-hmm. And so I think he hit that point really strongly. And it resonated with people for that moment. He got a big number, right? He got 6 point something million viewers. But as we look back, that's a momentary moment. And the show's long-term sort of place is probably roughly where it started or it will be soon.
Way more million than that on YouTube, not even on the live
right.
TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But he did not return to the air in our market, Columbus, because Sinclair owns our ABC station. And that he came back a few days later. A few days later, Sinclair and Nexstar added Kimmel back. Were you surprised that Sinclair pivoted so quickly? They were going to stand firm and not bring him back. And then it was only a couple of days later. What's your take on the Sinclair Nexstar move?
Yeah, I mean, it's really complicated because there are regulation issues and sort of contractual issues that make that really complicated. There, these affiliate deals, you're supposed to play the content that is coming out unless there's very specific conditions that are met, that it doesn't seem to be the case. I would say that Sinclair surprises me a little bit more. Nexstar clearly to me seems like a very sort of business oriented. They wanted to make sure that they were doing things to, keep things friendly with the Trump administration. Sinclair does seem more sort of overtly political, and overtly interested in sort of staking its claim to the conservative side of the spectrum. But ultimately, to be an affiliate is to play the content that the network distributes. There are specific times in which you can avoid that, but it becomes really messy and it creates really problematic precedents. So ultimately, I think the idea of it coming back to this makes sense. The system holds. How long will the system hold? I'm not sure if in the future we'd have a different outcome.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about, the breakdown political party-wise. I mean, there was a protest here of the Columbus ABC affiliate. About 100 people showed up to push back on Sinclair after Kimmel was returning elsewhere. And then there's also, people dropped Disney over the Jimmy Kimmel thing.
Yeah.
And you have to assume that there were both political parties there, because you heard from people on both sides of the aisle talking about free speech. So do you think that this is an issue where we can find some common ground, free speech-wise?
I do think so. I think that, and a lot of the response from the comedy world, I think, to the Kimmel situation sort of indicates that Americans do generally like the idea of free speech. They like the idea that people should be able to express even things that they don't agree with. And I do think you can find some common ground there. I think that, boycott Disney or boycott Sinclair, or boycott these different sort of, these are very small movements, right? And those are people themselves sort of expressing their position. I do think that it's still, I'm hopeful enough to say that the default mode for most Americans is that people should be able to express themselves. And that they don't want the government deciding what's going to be on television outside of the very extreme boundaries of things that the FCC has made to police. So I do think so. I think that that's a little bit of a hopeful moment there. I do think that you can find people across the spectrum who can look at what Jimmy Kimmel says and says that's his right to say it. If people want to watch it, they can watch it. If not, they can turn the TV off.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the future of late-night comedy TV with Matt Sinkowitz, a professor of communications and international studies at Boston College. He's the co-author of the book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. In your book, you make the case that the right is slowly building a comedy industrial complex, adopting some of the strategies of comedians like Jon Stewart and John Oliver. One of the stars that's getting big ratings right now is Greg Gutfeld. Let's listen to a clip from his show.
And that's the real problem for Dems. Demonization has become their only tool. They're like a kid who lost all his toys but still clutches one broken action figure. The rest has been stolen because they made theft legal.
So is the Gutfeld show similar to Kimmel and Colbert, except he's not making fun of President Trump? Instead, he's making fun of Democrats?
In some ways, it's similar. I would say in terms of its format, it's relatively similar in terms of its production approach, right? It's going to put out a show every night. In those ways, it's similar. It is much more overtly political, as much as Kimmel can be and Colbert can be, and that, which is saying something. Those shows have actually become rather political. The Gutfeld show is, it's on Fox News. It's on a political and news outlet. It is politically and partisan in a very overt way. Of course, you can definitely see a political sort of orientation to Colbert and Kimmel, and I don't want to pretend not, but those shows at least came from traditions of being broader audience, not necessarily pure political satire. Whereas what's going on in Gutfeld, it really is for an audience of people who are tuning in for politics and some comedy sort of mixed in with it. So to that extent, it's similar. It's a little bit different. In some ways, it's sort of an evolution ahead of where Colbert and Kimmel seem to have been heading, in that they have gotten more political over time as America has polarized. Right. As America has become more and more sort of politically distant, the right and the left, Colbert became more about doing politics and from a pretty overtly liberal perspective. Gutfeld sort of has jumped this. He just overtly went into it. And in an era in which the audience is so fractured, you can actually pick up a nice chunk by being the only person on the right side of the spectrum.
Yeah, I mentioned that his ratings are often better than his top competitors.
Mm-hmm.
But his show airs on Fox News, which means you have to have cable to watch it.
Yeah.
So it's like a smaller pool of a smaller pool, but he does get better ratings. And is he popular live, or is he popular the way we see with like Jimmy Fallon and company get a lot of views streaming and in the smaller clips they put out?
I mean, he does both. He does really well live. He does really well live. And I think what might be surprising to people is he does really well in what's called the demographic, 18 to 49 year olds. I think sometimes we associate Fox News with older viewers, and that's definitely true. But he actually does just as well or better when it comes to broadcast in that sort of younger 18 to 49 demo. I don't think his online presence is quite as strong as Colbert's, although I don't have that data off the top of my head. But he has a strong audience, and you're absolutely right. It's a much smaller pool you're pulling from when you're on cable, and he is able to bring in consistent viewers. He has a different time slot. He's 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Yeah. He used to be at 11:30, but do you think 10 p.m. was that a good move? I've often talked about it. I'm like, who stays up till 11:30 anymore? So
no, I think so, and particularly, I mean, you made this note about the online content, right? If you can see something the next day online, why stay up until 12:30 to watch it? So I think if you want people to actually watch it live, moving up to 10 o'clock makes a lot of sense. And again, we do sort of stereotype the Fox audience as being a bit older, but as I noted, he actually does better than you might think with younger people. So I think it was a really good move, and it might suggest a future possibility for different comedy broadcasts.
About a month ago, Jimmy Fallon invited Greg Gutfeld onto his show, and it had mixed reviews. Gutfeld, who he has his own show, but he came on to talk about a new game show. I guess all of these comedy hosts host game shows too.
Mm-hmm.
But the two men, they stayed away from politics. What did you make of Fallon inviting him on? Was that like a savvy move, or was it pandering? Like, why do you think Fallon went there?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a little of both. I think that it's in some ways it is sort of worth a shot, right? The idea is that much of the sort of right-leaning audience has written off mainstream comedy, broadcast comedy completely. I think that's because Colbert and Kimmel make a lot of headlines and they're so associated. Fallon there is looking for product differentiation. He wants to say, I'm not Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not Stephen Colbert. They do things from a fairly overtly political, more left-leaning perspective, and I want to play it down the middle, so I'll talk to anybody. This guy's got a new game show. What is a late night show except basically an advertisement with a couple songs in it? And so he brings on Gutfeld to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, that could be, and if the audience is offended by Gutfeld, a risk, but it also has the opportunity to invite in some of these viewers.
So overall, what's your take on the future of late night comedy? Are we going to see the Kimmels and Colberts of the world go away and be replaced with some, future Gutfelds, or is just all of late night going to go away?
I mean, I think it probably goes away, honestly. I mean, something will be on TV late at night and some of it might be funny, but I don't see it looking like what we've come to expect it to look like, if only because it's so expensive. Kimmel has this big staff, Colbert, this big staff. It's very, very expensive. And yet they can be, you know, competed with by either Gutfeld doing it a little bit more on shoestring, or can be blown out of the water by Joe Rogan or Kill Tony or these online outlets, largely online outlets that can produce things much more quickly, more efficiently, and more demographically targeted. So I'm sure something will be on the air. I'm sure there will be elements of the talk show format that last. But I think this sort of big, expensive, prime theater location kind of thing that we see, I think that's just going to be a relic at some point.
And then there's the conservative personalities who dominate the podcast space with like Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson. Many of those are ex-TV people. So do you think that the podcasts and, you know, a lot of these podcasts, they just sit in front of a mic and then they put it on YouTube. Is that the future?
Yeah, I mean, for now it is. I think that is the immediate future. I think that once the audience has gotten so divided up, at some point, the cost of making the shows has to go down and it just has to drop tremendously. So you're not going to have the Ed Sullivan Theater. It doesn't make sense, you know, every so often for a major event. But I think that people who can draw an audience by force of personality, by clever marketing and cross promotion, by doing things right in terms of hitting the algorithm, that's going to be much more economically efficient. And if somebody's funny, you know, if they can be funny at the Ed Sullivan Theater, they can be funny in front of a microphone also. And I do think that some of the pretension around what it takes to be a comedy show has gone away. That might be for the best. But we're going to lose some things also. We're going to lose some of these bigger, more exciting, innovative, expensive things. They're just not going to be there for us to watch for a while.
We've been talking about late night comedy with Matt Sienkiewicz, professor of communications and international studies at Boston College. He's the co-author of the book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. Thank you so much for your time today, Matt.
Oh, thanks for having me, Amy.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen at WOSU.org/allsides. You can subscribe to the podcast, and you can download our free mobile app. Also, be sure to like All Sides on Facebook, and you can follow the show on Instagram. We're at All Sides WOSU. I'm Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.